This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Both major political parties in the U.S. have their vocal factions, but the Republican Party is really going through it, with former President Donald Trump still working to hold the reins and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell hoping not to lose his grip. We spend the next hour talking national politics and its impact on local matters. We're joined today by the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, welcome back.
Thank you, Michael.
We also have with us, as always, University of Oklahoma Assistant Professor of Political Science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Dr. Bloom, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure to have you. As always, we start our monthly Political Junkie program with the Political Junkie trivia question. Ken, what is it this month?
Michael, this may be the most convoluted question in history. Let me see if I can get through this.
Yeah, let's not undersell it.
Right now, we know that the Senate is 50-50, and of course, it's tie-breaking vote of Vice President Kamala Harris, but it's 50-50 Senate. The trivia question is, let's see if I can get this straight. Who is the last Ohio, let me say this. Who was the Ohio politician who, when he came to the Senate, changed which party had the most seats? Wow.
So this is an Ohio politician who, when he came to the Senate, changed which party had the most seats.
That's correct.
So this was someone who came to the Senate perhaps like not in a traditional way?
Well, it could have been. It doesn't matter.
Gotcha.
But, the only hint we just gave away was it's a he. Now, of course, there's never been a woman in the Senate from Ohio, so that doesn't change anything. But yes, it's a he. When he came to the Senate, he changed which party had the most seats.
Okay. If you know the answer to that question, give us a call at 513-419-7100. In fact, if you have a better trivia question than that, give us a call at 513-419-7100. We might take that. Either way, Ken, tell them what they'll win.
They will win a trip into the
Cancun. You get to go to Cancun, right, and come back to the scorn of your neighbors.
Cancun, or jumping in the tidal basin with Fanny Fox.
I don't get the reference, but it sounds hilarious.
Fanny Fox, who ended the career of Wilbur Mills, she was the stripper, the Argentine firecracker. She died yesterday. She was the woman, the stripper, who the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, Wilbur Mills, frolicked with in 1974. That was one of the biggest sex scandals in the American history in the 1970s.
Oh, my goodness.
You kids today. Oh, my.
Well, that's why you're the political junkie. You know these things. And obviously, that is not the present. I think people have already forgotten the question, including us. But if you did remember it and you want to answer, it's 513-419-7100. And you will win a political junkie button. They are awesome. And we will send that off to you if you are the winner. I want to start this program with a quick quotation. Quote, Mitch is a dour, sullen, and unsmiling political hack, and if Republican senators are going to stay with him, they will not win again. Those are the words in a statement from former President Donald Trump about Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, the Republican from Kentucky. Ken, throughout Donald Trump's presidency, Mitch McConnell said repeatedly that this was the best period he had had in his long career in Washington, D.C. Even though those two wouldn't naturally gel together, they were able to execute a policy agenda pretty efficiently together. What has happened now, and what are the stakes, if any, for the Republican Party moving forward because of this new rift between them?
Well, I don't know how new of a rift it is, but it certainly was exacerbated when Mitch McConnell got on the floor of the Senate after voting to acquit the president on those impeachment charges. He said, yes, Donald Trump was responsible for the mayhem and the insurrection on January 6th. Yes, Donald Trump deserves to be held accountable. And by any stretch of the imagination, Donald Trump is responsible. But then he went on to say, well, we don't want to convict a former president. Of course, he's only a former president because Mitch McConnell delayed the trial into the Biden presidency. But the fact is that, you know, anytime you speak ill of Donald Trump, Trump does not forget that. So for all the things that Mitch McConnell did on behalf of Donald Trump in the 4 years of their presidency, especially when it comes to judges, that's not good enough for Donald Trump. He's out for the blood now. Of course, Mitch McConnell, as you know, was just reelected last year. He won't be up and up again for another 5 years. But he's probably going to suggest that maybe somebody take on Mitch. The fact is, it's a 50-50 Senate. Probably nobody can keep that team together better than Mitch McConnell.
And 513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation if you'd like to lend your perspective about current events and national politics and what you might see as their impact on local elections. I want to note that Mitch McConnell has never been particularly overwhelmingly popular among the electorate, either nationally or even in Kentucky. His poll numbers are typically underwater, but he has been elected to the United States Senate now 7 times. So he manages to win despite people not having high approval ratings of him. It seems like in the inner workings of Washington, however, there is great respect for Mitch McConnell. He is what they call a man of the Senate. He knows the machinations of how to conduct business in that storied hall. I want to note a report in Newsweek quoting Lindsey Graham that says Donald Trump is more dominant in the Republican Party than Mitch McConnell. Dr. Rachel Bloom from the University of Oklahoma. One, is that true? And two, what does that mean?
Well, I think if we mean by dominance, ability to command voters, ability to shape the news cycle, then Donald Trump is and always has been more dominant, possibly even before he got involved in politics. He's been an entertainer for quite some time. Mitch McConnell, on the other hand, is a very good legislator. He's very good at doing the behind the scenes kind of work that it takes to herd cats in the Senate. So to an extent, that is true. Now, right now, Mitch McConnell has more power over outcomes congressionally, legislatively, than Donald Trump does. But this is an interesting question about the soul of the Republican Party. So is the Republican Party a party of leaders like McConnell, even Pence, possibly Romney, or is the Republican Party a party of Donald Trump and the House Freedom Caucus and a couple of senators who are willing to cast their lots in with Donald Trump? And I think the short answer is that it is both, because no party is ever fully unified behind a leader. And the next couple of years, as the Republican Party sorts through its hangover from the Trump era, we're going to be seeing if a lot of representatives can actually take on that mantle of Trumpism or the authoritarian style. And what I suspect is that while they do this, Mitch McConnell will be doing what he has always done, which is just keeping his nose down, doing his job, and whenever he can, making things a little bit difficult for Democrats.
It's an interesting point you raised there, Dr. Bloom, because Mitch McConnell has been able to do that. He was able to do that over the years in which Donald Trump was president of the United States, despite President Trump's calls to drain the swamp, which seemed to be a reference to people like McConnell, people who had been there for a long time. And McConnell was able to not only navigate those waters, but his wife, Elaine Chao, served as Secretary of Transportation in the Trump administration. So they obviously had a strong working relationship. With the deterioration of the relationship now on full display publicly by both gentlemen, and even former allies of Mitch McConnell now coming out more enthusiastically for Donald Trump, does that imperil the Republicans' ability to obstruct the agenda of President Joe Biden, Ken?
I don't think so. And I think Dr. Bloom made a very convincing case why about the conflict in the party. But remember one thing, Mitch McConnell was Mitch McConnell even before Donald Trump came along in 1996. In 2016, let's remember that it was Mitch McConnell who single-handedly blocked the nomination of Merrick Garland, President Obama's choice for the Supreme Court. Donald Trump had nothing to do with that. It was all Mitch McConnell. So for whatever you think about Mitch McConnell, and Michael, you're absolutely right, he's not especially popular among his colleagues, certainly not in Kentucky, but he knows how to play the game, he knows the rules, and he held up, you know, the fact that Merrick Garland, who is the nominee for the attorney generalship, the fact that Lindsey Graham could say to him, or I think it was Ted Cruz who said to him, can you guarantee us that you'll keep politics out of the Justice Department? Oh, my goodness, I almost fell off my chair. I mean, this is coming from a party that politics was running through the Justice Department via William Barr. So it's good to see Merrick Garland back again. But Mitch McConnell knows exactly where the bodies are buried, knows exactly what to do. And yes, I think this is definitely I love. I think this is definitely Mitch. This is definitely Donald Trump's party. But he probably couldn't get things effectively done because what Mitch McConnell doesn't. He doesn't have to defend Donald Trump on the Senate floor. He has to block Biden initiatives. And we could see, as we saw what he did to President Obama, he'll do what he can to stop Biden as well.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. It's also the number to call to try your hand at this month's Political Junkie trivia question, which I will read now. Who was the Ohio politician who, by coming to the United States Senate, changed which party had the most seats? This question was inspired by the fact that the Senate is currently evenly divided among Republicans and Democrats at 50-50, but the Democrats are technically in charge because any ties would be broken by Vice President Kamala Harris. This battle between President Trump and Senator McConnell, it's just getting started, it appears. We don't want to think about the 2024 presidential election yet because there's business at hand for the new administration. We might not even want to think about the 2022 midterms yet, except for the fact that here in Ohio, Senator Rob Portman, another one of those, I guess it would be safe to characterize as a more traditional Republican that you would expect in the United States Senate, has announced that he will not seek another term. And so a primary has already emerged involving former Republican Ohio chairperson Jane Timken and former Ohio treasurer Josh Mandel. And so far, they are trying their best to position themselves as Donald Trump Republicans. I also want to note that just this week, President Trump issued a statement in support of a candidate, Bob Patichick, as the person he supports to be the next chairperson of the Ohio Republican Party. So, Dr. Bloom, not only is this just speculation about who might fall in line with President Trump, who might share his values and might want to push what could be described as his agenda into the future, this is actively happening right now. So what kind of weight can we expect that to carry?
Well, this is all a good early testing ground for the battle that is starting to play out. And these two candidates are really interesting. Josh Mandel has a long history of support from the Ohio Tea Party. He has been running for Senate or other offices since at least 2012, if not earlier, each time with state, local, and national Tea Party backing. Jane Timken does not have that much Tea Party support, although she has from time to time been accepted by that wing of the party when she's challenging someone like Matt Borges or someone else who's seen as establishment. But the two of these candidates right now are both trying to run to the extremes, which probably is going to result in one of them being declared not the heir apparent. And what we're seeing in this battle and in Trump's choice of Patichick is Trump continuing to try to exert influence on the party. I think that's the first thing we can think about, and that's pretty obvious. The other thing we need to think about, though, is how this has been a long time in the making, right? These candidates, especially someone like Josh Mandel, did not pop out of the woodwork this year. They have been pushing a more insurrectionist, seditionist, extremist view of politics and compromise for almost a decade. So now we are just seeing an opportunity for this pretty strong chunk of the Ohio Republican Party to try to make its presence known in national politics.
I should note, Rachel, that you have academic research to back this up. You and Christopher Sebastian Parker from the University of Washington recently conducted what is described as a two-wave panel study of the Make America Great Again movement as recently as last December in the second half of January. And according to the reporting on this that I read, you found that at least 60% of these folks are white, Christian, and male. Half are retired over the age of 65. Earn at least $50,000 per year. I thought it was interesting that you also found from 80 to 99% of these folks said they were concerned that, quote, real Americans are losing freedoms. So this Donald Trump movement doesn't just come out of thin air. It obviously resonates strongly and deeply with a significant portion of our population. Tell us a little bit more about what you found in that respect.
Well, what we found was similar to some of what we had been looking at with the Tea Party several years ago, but there were a couple key differences. So one of the big hallmarks of the Tea Party was its opposition to the Republican Party and to politics as usual. And the Tea Party operated as a faction. They worked within the party. They took over party offices. They eventually were able to secure nominations, even get a president who would do their bidding into office. But this MAGA study shows us the movement side of what's going on. And the movement side is how regular people, voters, people who are not party officials, think about these things. And what we found is a little bit scary. The most disturbing part to me was actually views on democracy. So MAGA sympathizers in the mass public, and we can think of these as people who strongly approve of Trump no matter what he ever does. So not every Republican is a MAGA sympathizer. But in the mass public, MAGA sympathizers really do buy Trump's lies on the election. They overwhelmingly think fraud occurred in the presidential, if not the congressional elections. They think fraud occurred in Georgia. They are somewhat opposed to the protests if you allow them to say that they were from Antifa, but otherwise they think the protesters had a point. And they're in favor of things that are definitely not constitutional, like allowing Trump to be president for 3 or more terms, clamping down on access to ballots, and so forth. So what we see from these data is how pervasive this status-threatened kind of anti-democracy sentiment has become. It's no longer just in the halls of power. It is in the party base. It is in the electorate.
That's Dr. Rachel Bloom from the University of Oklahoma. We're also joined by the political junkie, Ken Rudin. And Ken, I think back to, I guess, when I was coming into adulthood and entering the professional world during President George W. Bush's administration. And
oh, dear God. Oh, God. He's so young.
Or maybe you're so old, frankly. I mean, have we ever considered that?
I think, you know, something I never thought of it that way.
Well, you might remember, though, I mean, those were pretty contentious times during the early days of the, quote, war on terror. And we heard about real Americans and what your values are supposed to be if you are an American and how you're supposed to feel about something. This seems to have evolved in an even more cynical manner based on the research that was just provided by Dr. Bloom there. And I'm wondering your comments on what's found in that.
Yeah, I think it actually goes back to the other Bush, the earlier Bush, George H.W. Bush, who was obviously Ronald Reagan's vice president. And I think of that because, one, that was during the riot, because when George Bush was elected in 1988, after 2 terms of Reagan, the Republicans were still in the House, in the minority of the House. And by 1994, they were in the House in the minority for 40 years. So there were so many Republicans who said they were willing to accept what the Democrats gave them. And there were other people like Newt Gingrich who said, this is not the way things should be. We've been accepting our minority status for far too long. It's time for us to take advantage. So even many moderate Republicans in the House rallied behind Gingrich. They were tired of being in the minority. And Gingrich, you know, a gloves off, assault on niceties and comity because they wanted to win. And so that began with Republicans stopping the nominations of Democratic nominees for the judgeships. It stopped. It started with more personal attacks of the opponents. And I think starting with Gingrich and around 93, 94, that's where we saw a lot of the ugliness. Can I just say one thing, though, about what Dr. Bloom said earlier? Not about her research at all, but when you were talking about Jane Timken and Josh Mandel, I think Dr. Bloom called them like an extremist wing of the Republican Party. And I disagree with that. I think that they may be extremists to people who think of politics should be just, you know, more nice and more accommodating and more give and take. But I don't think if you look at the Republican Party today, Josh Mandel, Jane Timken, that is the party. First of all, I think that President Trump, former President Trump, personally favors Timken, and I think she's going to wind up being the nominee. But it seems like the Republican Party, forget about the Marjorie Taylor Greene crazies of the world, but I think for the most part, as Dr. Bloom says, they do believe the election was stolen. They do believe that that chicanery is what put Joe Biden in the White House. And I think there are even normal, and I put that in quotes, normal Republicans who really and truly believe that. So I don't know how we get out of that. I don't know how we turn to normalcy. I don't even know what normalcy is anymore. But I don't know if it's extreme. I think it's just they followed this messiah over a cliff. And actually, I don't even know if it's over a cliff, because other than the fact that the Democrats control the White House, the Senate, and the House, the Republicans did very well in 2020, picking up seats in the House, picking up state legislatures all around the country. And I think they go into 2022 in good shape. So I don't know when normalcy ever comes back, but I'm not sure if the majority of the country sees it as extreme.
We're going to talk more about that just ahead. And we're also going to take some phone calls for those of you who want to offer your comment and your perspective. And also those of you who want to take a try to answer this month's Political Junkie trivia question. Who was the Ohio politician who, by coming to the U.S. Senate, changed which party had the most seats? You are listening to The Political Junkie on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A quick reminder that we are still in the midst of our winter fun drive. You may have been listening yesterday morning when Marianne Zalesnik and I were doing our part for the winter fun drive, only to have to come on the air and say something technical has gone wrong with one of the national services that help us process your donations. And we had to cancel most of yesterday's fun drive. We lost 7 hours of the fun drive. So we're trying to make that up today. So if you're listening and you like programs like Cincinnati Edition and the coverage that our local news team provides to you, you can give us a call now, 513-419-7155, or even better, give online at WVXU.org. We've got a lot of thank you gifts for all of you who become sustaining members now. Take a look at those at WVXU.org. If you're sitting on the fence, I'm sure after browsing those gifts, you will become a member, and we thank you so much for your support. And we continue now with The Political Junkie, Ken Rudin, and University of Oklahoma Assistant Professor of Political Science, Rachel Bloom. A quick reminder of what our trivia question is for this month's Political Junkie program. Who was the Ohio politician who, by coming to the Senate, changed which party had the most seats? Ken got off to a rocky start in asking that question today, and we were unsure whether that was going to work, but we do have someone who wants to try to answer it. His name is Thomas. He joins us on the phone now. Hi, Thomas.
Hi.
So you have an answer to our question?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thomas Burke.
Ken?
Who is Thomas Burke?
You tell us.
Well, actually, Thomas Burke is the correct answer.
Oh, how about that?
But it's a great story. Do I have 45 minutes to tell the story?
Go right ahead. I'd love to just sit here the rest of the time.
Okay, great. So Thomas Burke was the mayor of Cleveland in 1953. Robert Taft, Mr. Republican, when he was in office, there were 48 Republicans, 47 Democrats, and one independent. When Robert Taft died in 1953, Thomas Burke was appointed to the Senate that made it 48 Democrats, 47 Republicans, and one independent. And as you well know, Thomas Burke was appointed to the Senate by Governor Frank Lauschi. And there is never a show I can get let go by without talking about the late, great Frank Lauschi. So that's Thomas Burke is the correct answer.
There you go. Congratulations, Thomas. I'm going to place you on hold, and either our producer, Selena, or our producer, Nick, will take down your information, and we will be sending you, unfortunately, not the gift that Ken Rudin was talking about earlier in the program, but we will be sending you a political junkie pen. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks so much for your call.
What's the Tidal Basin incident? What's Tidal Basin? I don't remember that.
I got to look it up. You always teach me something, Professor Rudin, and I'm gonna be smarter for the career I have here at WVXU. 513-419-7100 is the number to call to share your thoughts about what we're talking about today. We'll go now to David, who's on the line with us. Hi, David. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, so hello, Michael, and my greetings again to Ken Rudin, the political junkie.
Hi, David.
I have a question for him. I'm not going to take a hazard or guess. I wasn't planning on hazarding a guess on the trivia question this time because I have to tell you I'm still waiting for my political junkie button that your producer, Selena, promised me in December. That's right. I'm still holding a grudge about that.
All right.
Still waiting for that button.
Well, we're going to make sure that gets to you, David. I'm sorry that it has not arrived. I don't know if it's a postal service issue or something internally. We're going to get to the bottom of it, and you're going to get a button.
Can we fire Selena?
We certainly cannot. I'd be lost without Selena.
Okay.
But go ahead, David.
Anyway, the question that time was Senator Rob Portman. But I wanted to ask Ken Rudin very much about the race for U.S. Senate coming up for the 2020 midterm in Ohio and about the much-anticipated announcement by Representative Tim Ryan from Ohio's 13th district of a Senate run, although it's not yet official. And what a Tim Ryan campaign could throw into the mix politically, both in Ohio and nationally. Now that Ohio is not quite the blue state that it has been in the past, and Ryan coming off an abbreviated run for president himself in 2019, and he finally what he might be able to accomplish in the U.S. Senate, working side by side with in the delegation with U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown.
All right, David, we're going to hang up, and I'll talk to Selena after the show. We'll make sure we have your information and get that political junkie button out to you. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the nudge. And thanks for your patience holding. And we'll talk about Tim Ryan now. Thanks so much for the phone call. Ken, Tim Ryan, obviously a Democrat from northeastern Ohio, and is apparently flirting with possibly running for the U.S. Senate seat that's now open with the retirement of Rob Portman. And David wants your analysis on his chances. Tim Ryan did raise his national profile maybe only slightly during his brief run for the presidency last year.
Well, first of all, David, thank you for the question. It's a great question. And even more so than Tim Ryan's abortive trip for president, he also ran against Nancy Pelosi as speaker because he thought that she was too left coastish, too outside liberal, and did not speak to the working men and women of America. And in that sense, Tim Ryan is a little bit like Sherrod Brown, who probably is the only Democrat. First of all, he is the only statewide Democrat in office in Ohio, and Sherrod Brown does it not because he's a left-wing liberal or anything like that, but he just has this way of speaking to, as they say, working people, the working class that Tim Ryan has been known for battling on behalf. By the way, we always talk about Tim Ryan being the heir apparent for the Democrats. I always thought that his predecessor, James Traficant, was the heir apparent, but that joke doesn't really work in 2021. Anyway, because Michael won't remember that. But more importantly, I kind of think that Ryan, who is going to announce, my understanding, is going to announce his candidacy next month. I think pretty much other than Amy Acton, who is working on the coronavirus stuff under DeWine, I think that the most of the party perhaps will back Ryan. And I think he has the best chance among the Democrats. Of course, as we've talked about, both Josh Mandel and I think the predictive nominee, Jane Timken, is more conservative than the state is in itself. But both times, 2016 and 2020, Donald Trump won the state by 8 percentage points. So I know this is not the same state of the days of John Glenn and Howard Metzenbaum and Celeste and all those people. But I think Tim Ryan has the best shot for the Democrats to win the seat. And remember, with a 50-50 Senate, every seat is crucial.
Let's bring back Dr. Rachel Bloom, an assistant professor of political science at the University of Oklahoma. Excuse me. Dr. Bloom, Barack Obama also won Ohio. So I'm wondering, based on the conversation So based on the conversation that we've already had about the makeup of this fervent Donald Trump base, and Donald Trump did win the state of Ohio both times that he ran for president pretty comfortably, what can Democrats expect to do in order to counter that? The party appears to be a little bit in disarray. They are going to have a new chairman as well as they try to figure out what to do. Pretty significant race, one for U.S. Senate, especially an open seat. What type of uphill climb do they face in this environment where someone like Donald Trump will likely still loom over it?
This is a really interesting question. One I haven't seen getting enough play. So this could go so many ways. We could be looking at another Georgia, although, of course, there are many differences between Ohio and Georgia, and it wouldn't be as historic if there were another Democratic senator from Ohio. But you could see a lot of galvanization and energy in this race that, you know, maybe a Democrat could become a senator in this seat. It's possible. But the Ohio Democratic Party in general has, they've gotten the short end of the redistricting stick. And I think the composition of the state legislature, if someone only looked at that, would lead them to believe that Ohio is a one-party state or pretty close to it, when in reality, there are plenty of Democratic representatives to Congress. There are Democratic senators. Ohio has recently gone for Democratic presidents, as you pointed out. So there are still many Ohio voters who are not Republicans, and probably even more who are not Trump Republicans. So it seems possible for Democrats to win this seat, but they would need some sort of strategy, or they would need a lot of energy behind this. And because the election is not happening tomorrow, it's really hard for us to know yet if they're going to be able to amass that energy. They have quite a bit of time, well, in political terms, to plan.
Can Senator,
can I just say, let me add one thing. The one thing that's very important is, remember, 2022 will be 2 years of Joe Biden. If Joe Biden makes a mess of the presidency, and we've seen a lot of first-term presidents make a mess of the presidency, if he does, then no Democrat is going to win the seat. Then, you know, Republicans will clean up in the House and Senate. So a lot has to do with the success and the implementation of the plans that Joe Biden wants to put forward. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was going to raise a point similar to that, I suppose. I mean, the reason that this particular Senate seat is going to be in play next year is because Rob Portman is retiring. And when he announced that he was stepping away and wasn't going to mount another campaign, he said, you know, stuff about incivility and how challenging it is in Washington right now. But there didn't seem to be a lot of blame placed on fellow Republicans. And I'm wondering what your thoughts might be on the incivility we're seeing in Washington. We certainly are seeing that. But is Joe Biden in a better position to talk about unity than, say, Republican members of either house in the Congress?
I do. He did not run for president as an ideologue. You know, the people who were ready to punch Republicans in the nose, like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, they did not get the nomination. Joe Biden talked about his 36 years in the Senate and how he worked with McConnell and other Republicans. But at the same time, I mean, here we go. He has a nominee for the Office of Management and Budget, Neera Tanden, who is completely well qualified for the OMB, for the budget director, but she has a history of sending out tweets. Now, of course, for Republicans to object about a Democrat sending out incendiary tweets is a bit, you know, ridiculous. But I mean, you know, when you talk about unity, here she is calling, you know, Mitch McConnell Moscow Mitch, and calling Ted Cruz a vampire, and calling Susan Collins the worst of the worst. So So every time you talk about unity, the Republicans will say, well, what about Neera Tanden? But having said that, look, Joe Biden is somebody who does believe in the system. He does want it to work. He has never been a bomb thrower. So I think if anybody could preach unity in this country, it's Joe Biden. Accomplishing it is something else, because as we'll see this weekend in Florida at the CPAC rally, the Republican Party is in no move for compromise. I mean, for them to say that we want civility now after 4 years of Donald Trump is pretty remarkable. But I don't see both parties coming to any kind of seeing eye to eye for at least the next couple of years, if not longer.
Dr. Bloom, do you gauge any interest from the public at large to unite? I'm sure people are irritated by political fights, but at the same time, you've got Republican voters, many of whom still feel falsely that the election was stolen from them, that President Trump should be in his second term right now. He's not. You have Democrats who have been angry over the past 4 years and want revenge. Is there an appetite among the American electorate for unity truly?
I think there is. The question is just how voracious is that appetite? And is unity the top preference of a lot of voters, or is it one of their preferences, but definitely below their side winning? And there are some political science tools we could use to think about this. One of them is polarization in the electorate. A trend that's been really disturbing in the last 5-10 years has been the rise in affective polarization, which means voters really, really, really hate people who are in the other party, because their party is their identity. And this is a much, much more prevalent trend among Republicans. The Democrats have always been a little bit more scattered, and they remain so. So that is one piece of the puzzle. We know there's a chunk of Americans who don't want unity or compromise, but perhaps those Americans have always been there, just under different guises. Another tool we could use to look at this is the idea of a median voter, which is more of a theoretical construct than an actual person. But there's this idea that the average voter is somewhere in the middle, and that for a general election, a president is supposed to run to the middle to court that voter. And that was certainly the gamble that Joe Biden made. And the fact that he did win the popular vote by such a margin gives some support to the idea that at least a majority of American voters want someone who's a little bit more in the middle, or who's at least willing to talk about compromising. The problem, of course, is that most of these representatives are thinking about one of two things. They're either thinking about primary challenges, and especially Republicans are thinking about primary challenges from the right, which might give them less incentive to move to the middle. And they could be thinking about general election challenges as well. On both sides, Democrats might be, on one hand, nervous to go too far to the left if they're in a Republican or a swing district, and that could lead us to a little bit more compromise. But you could see it going the other way, too. You could see some Democrats who think they represent a very safe district moving to the left to ward off any challengers from the left. So there are a lot of moving pieces here. And the short answer is there is some appetite for unity, but not everybody has that appetite.
We're going to talk a little bit more about the quest for unity in the halls of Congress, or the lack thereof, involving a recent display over the Equality Act, which would extend civil rights protections to lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgender people in this country. You're listening to The Political Junkie on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace. You know, we talk a lot on this show about people's careers and how they do what they do. And whenever people flip the script on me and ask me how I do my job, I tell them that what I do on a day-to-day basis would not be possible if it were not for the support of public radio listeners. It's because of you that Marketplace is able to report on the business and economic news that affects all of our lives every single day. So thank you for supporting our program and your local public radio station. We appreciate it.
We do appreciate it indeed, and you can join as a sustaining member right now at WVXU.org. Take a look at all the thank you gifts available there. I'm sure if you're on the fence, not sure if you're ready to give or want to give, there are plenty of gifts there that I'm sure will sway you. Know that we lost 7 hours of our fundraiser yesterday due to some technical problems that one of our hosts was having, one of the hosts that handle our pledge processing. So very critical part of our pledge drive. So we are trying to make up that time and hope you will help us do that. If you like programs like Cincinnati Edition and all the local news that our team provides for you, please consider giving now. You can become a sustaining member for as little as $5. Join now at WVXU.org or call 513-419-7155. And you are listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, joined by public radio fan Ken Rudin, known as the Political Junkie. Ken recorded one of those spots for us promoting our fund drive, and we are grateful to you for that and for the time you're giving us today, Ken.
Can I just say one thing, Michael? I would like to donate a Political Junkie t-shirt and a Political Junkie pair of socks as gifts for your promotion.
I'm going to put you in touch with our development office, and we're going to make sure that that happens.
Worth millions.
A very, very valuable gift. We're also joined by University of Oklahoma Assistant Professor of Political Science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Rachel, good to have you with us again.
Thank you.
We got an email from Kevin and Mason who writes, to those journalists and pundits in the high towers who wonder why progressives like myself are not so eager to embrace MAGA QAnon supporters, consider the fact that even after the Bob Woodward recording was released, proving that Trump knew exactly how deadly the pandemic would be, and after he continued to dismiss the pandemic and claim that it was a hoax, roughly 8 million more people voted for him this year than in 2016. This tells me that his base's hatred for liberals outweighs their concern for their own health and that of their communities. That is my definition of deplorable. Another email came in from David who writes, I believe we have to listen to those who have a different point of view, wrong though they may be, but you can't change someone's mind with facts when they got there through emotions. And I think Trump plays them like a violin. But my question, he says, is about cancel culture. This seems to me an emotional appeal in the extreme. Will this go away? He says, I can think of at least 500,000 who were canceled, and that number could have been greatly lessened by a president who didn't say things like the pandemic would be over by the spring. So, Dr. Bloom, perhaps that's a question for you.
Yes.
I guess if I were to frame it, it was a pretty tough thing for him to write there that 500,000 people were canceled. I think that's a reference, obviously, to COVID-19, where we just surpassed 500,000 deaths in this country. And so he's talking about cancel culture, which has become a buzzword of the day. And he says this seems to be an emotional appeal in the extreme. Will it go away?
Well, these are big topics. And I mean, these are great questions and great emails. So kudos to you guys. I'll take on the cancel culture topic and I'll separate that from COVID, even though it's equally or even more important. I'm just not sure I have anything original to add to the COVID conversation, but I do agree that cancel culture is often emotional and is often based in kind of a knee-jerk reaction to something that really offends somebody. I think it's also true that cancel culture is not as pervasive as Fox News and a lot of right-wing media outlets have made it be. So anytime they don't like anything that someone who's not toeing the line does, they call it cancel culture, or they'll talk about free speech. So there's definitely some conceptual slippage here. But we are seeing a little bit of the tension that arises when we have people who are applying double standards to the people they agree with and to the people they don't agree with. So you can just think of some of the free speech discussions we've heard lately. Back when NFL athletes were kneeling during the national anthem, a lot of people on the left were saying this is free speech, and a lot of people on the right said, no, the NFL is a company, they can crack down on it. In other words, they can cancel these players. And then it turns around and Donald Trump gets kicked off Twitter, and all of a sudden Republicans are saying, but it's free speech, a private company doesn't have the power to cancel somebody. So at some point, I think we need to go back to the origin of these concepts like free speech and what it means to have rights and duties in a democracy. And remember that if we want the freedom to say or do what we want and express our views, that we have to be willing to give other people the freedom that they want to express their views, even if we think they're terrible. Now, of course, I'm sidestepping the entire question of public companies or private companies canceling, so to speak. As of right now, that is still their right. And until the Supreme Court rules otherwise, that cancel culture is still something, or canceling is still something that any private company can do if it so chooses.
We've got just a few minutes left. Ken, just before we went to break, I noted that Representative Marie Newman, a Democrat from Illinois, earlier this week, I think it was yesterday, in fact, raised a transgender pride flag outside her office. Her office is across the hall from that of Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, who then took to posting up a sign that says there are two genders, male and female, follow the science. So this is the behavior that we're seeing in the halls of Congress. We are also seeing some, what some have characterized as hypocritical criticism of nominees to President Joe Biden's cabinet, particularly Neera Tanden, nominated to direct the Office of Budget Management, for mean tweets. This follows the presidency full of mean tweets. So I would like for you, if you could, to just, knowing how poorly behaved the legislative branch is at this point, what impact that might have on Joe Biden's agenda, and if it could be a good thing. I guess I'm saying, does the president have the opportunity to be the adult in the room here?
Well, he does. That doesn't mean the students are going to stop throwing spitballs in class. I mean, look, Congress has been this like this for a long, long time. And Marjorie Taylor Greene was elected. A lot of these new members of Congress were not elected to make the system work. It was to tear down the system. So when Congress, for example, punished Marjorie Taylor Greene by stripping her of her two committees, you know, the freshman congresswoman from Georgia, that's probably the best thing that happened to her. Who cares what she has to say? Do you think she wants to be stuck in committees? She wants to make signs, and she wants to talk about male and female being genders. I thought they were sexes. But anyway, I mean, she wants to get people enraged and upset and angry and anguished. And that's what happened. So, look, you know, we could talk about the actual bill, the Equality Act, the fact that it passed the House last time and eight Republicans in the Senate voted for it, but it was killed in the Senate. We assume it's going to pass the House again this time. Marie Newman, of course, is a freshman Democrat from Illinois, and there may be more appetite for it in the Senate, certainly a vote in the Senate, given the fact that the Republicans control it. And we'll see what happens. But as far as behind the scenes, the snickering comments, the Matt Gaetzes and the Jim Jordans and the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Lauren Boberts of the world, they seem to draw the headlines, and that's the way we're going to see Congress for at least the next couple of years.
Doesn't it seem as though it's about whether I can dunk on my political opponents? Can I drag my political opponent on Twitter? How much clout can I get? That's so much more important to politicians these days than passing any legislation of substance.
Absolutely. And by the way, one little PS about cancel culture. It was very interesting. Fox News, who is the champion of criticizing cancel culture, they fire Lou Dobbs. Talk about cancel culture.
Yeah, that is true. Ken Rudin is the political junkie and our guest every month, usually alongside our good friend from the University of Oklahoma, where she is an assistant professor of political science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Dr. Bloom, thank you so much for being with us and sharing that research with us. And Ken, thank you for being with us as well. I will connect you with our development office. And if we don't get it done this fund drive, I'm sure that we'd be interested in having some of your gifts in the next fund drive. Have
a
good one.
Your audience deserves the best, including political junkie t-shirts and socks. Agreed. I love your audience, Michael. You know that. And Dr. Bloom, it's great being on with you as always.
You as well. Always a pleasure.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is still Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks.